Welcome, dear listeners, to the inaugural Jacobs podcast. And if you are listening, you've obviously taken time to download and tune in, so I cannot thank you enough. A podcast like this is something that I've wanted to do for some time now. Perhaps, like most Australians, I feel that current affairs has become a horse race, a boxing match where the score is constantly tallied but we've lost sight of the core picture. We fail to talk about issues with any depth. Certainly, despite our success as a nation, and I'm really proud of our past, we have huge challenges stacking the horizon. As one former Australian Prime Minister recently lamented, we have an abundance of energy, but the world's highest power prices, an abundance of land and property prices to rival Hong Kong's, some of the world's smartest people, yet with school rankings behind Kazakhstan. Yes, these are policy issues with highly common sense solutions, but it is hard not to complain about wider problems. ABC objectivity, companies campaigning for same-sex marriage but not economic reform, banks scared into not investing in coal, and of course, trigger warnings. I don't apologise for what this podcast is about. I am a conservative, I am on the right, and I believe that freedom of the individual is the highest goal a society like Australia can strive to. But admitting my political and philosophical foundation, I feel I have to play defence. Yes, I do find myself as a conservative, but I'm not dogmatic, and I have worked hard to challenge and refine my views. The best discussions I've had, after all, are with those who I amicably disagree. I feel if we design solutions that maximise individual talent and freedom, and don't trample on what works, our best days really do lie ahead. A recent podcast I listened to from the US noted that the best discussions are being had, from religion and politics to tax cuts and Bitcoin, not on CNN or even Fox News, but on podcasts. I hope what I can bring to listeners is a sense of civility, fair-mindedness, decorum, and a genuine desire to explore ideas. If there is any impatience for common sense, or to discuss issues with fair mind or depth, then I hope the Jacobs podcast can temper this impatience. Joining me on most episodes, I'm proud to say, will be Jordan Shopov, friend and founder of WIG Capital Management. We will cover topics on leadership, economics, politics, diplomacy, and questions of reform. So I hope you enjoy what I have to say or the discussions I have. And of course, please don't hesitate to get in touch through my website at seanjacobs.com.au. Happy listening. All right, Jordan, well, welcome to the inaugural Jacobs podcast. Thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, mate. This is great.
Excellent. Now, I know we've been sort of talking about this for a while and thinking about doing it, but and I know we did grapple with the idea of doing doing Bitcoin, I think, for the inaugural episode, but I think the intervention of loved ones just directed us to something a bit more humble.
And yes, I think wise counsel.
That's right. So I think that's pretty wise stuff, but. And what I wanted to do, I think, is something just really basic, and what we agreed on was just to look at your reading, basically. And I remember the last time we caught up with each other, the last time I went down to see you in Melbourne, you were reading, I think it was The Theory of Moral Sentiments by Adam Smith, the 18th century economist, and you were grappling with him, and also just how this book, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, actually weighed against The Wealth of Nations. And it sort of got me thinking about reading and just reading more broadly. And how did you come to be such a voracious reader, Jordan?
Yeah, so I don't think I've ever told you this, Sean, but it was partly hanging out with guys like you and people that we were working with when we were in Canberra. Up until that point, I didn't read that often. So I was, we were about 24, 25 when we were working together. And I think that was the first time in my life that I met a bunch of people who were so intellectually stimulating and had such a diverse range of thoughts, but they were reading beyond stuff that, you know, I'd always stuck to what was in the curriculum at school or uni.
Yep.
I'd never really read widely. And it didn't take long to figure out that the people who were the most well-read had the deepest opinions and were really hard to challenge. When if you had a different view, you're like, wow, I can't challenge this guy knows what I'm talking about. And so I learned from guys like you and people won't know these people, but like Witheridge and Brownie and Hugh, like they, all these guys were
really some of our colleagues.
And I think that was what really got me onto it. And I think the thing I took from that was not only reading widely, but it was this idea of self-education. I think up until that point, you accept everything from your teachers and uni is like that's where education comes from. But I think that was the beginning for me of realizing that a lot of education is bottom up, and you have to follow your curiosity and, you know, see where it takes you. And you can't do that without reading widely. So that was, that's sort of the origins of it.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, look, absolutely. And I know, you know, you make the point about just being able to grab different arguments and have broader perspective. And look, I think that's something that certainly refined my reading and just, you know, that capacity to just pull in different perspectives and know that you're not just sticking to the curriculum, but you're grabbing wider things. And, you know, one thing as well, like I, you know, just not to be indulgent for the whole thing, but I, you know, one thing that I enjoy reading is just biographies too. And, you know, one of the things that I did was look around, you know, not only guys like yourself, but other people, you know, other good figures throughout history, you know, a lot of people that we admire and respect, not just people like Adam Smith, but a lot of just great leaders. And you really do see that it's that Truman sort of, you know, all leaders are readers. And, you know, you can't really get better or you can't access better arguments unless you just spend some time just, you know, actually going, you know, actually reading, actually opening up books, getting broader perspectives and that sort of thing. And setting off on this course, did you just kind of work out where you, I guess, were most ignorant and sort of go down that path? Or did you have people or do you have books that you'd sort of, or thinkers that you'd sort of known a bit about and then just decided to track those down and start reading their stuff? How'd you go about it?
I think it started, I mean, I think everyone kind of figures out by the time you're, you know, in your mid-20s where your interests lie. Like you have a vague idea. I mean, you know, broad disciplines at least. And so you kind of, I think everyone kind of starts off looking for key texts in that area, whether it's a biography or something more textbook-like. But there was a couple of topics for me. One was finance and investing. The other one was more economics or political economy more broadly. Yep. And, you know, it doesn't take long to figure out with an internet search where the key texts are. And then one thing you would have found, obviously, is, you know, when you read a book, five more books come out of it. It's like you don't ever read one book and feel satisfied. It's like, you know, it raises as many questions as it answers. And so that's kind of, it kicks it along from there. But there's always, I think what I found, I was thinking about there's certain key texts in your, you know, your intellectual history that really define your thinking and set you off on your path. And I think there's probably three or four texts that have really shaped me. And you know when you read them because it's like a paradigm shift. You see the world in a new light and you're like this. It's like the curtains are pulled back and you can see everything much more clearly. And that, you know, that leads to new texts and you really start delving into it. And one of them for me was The Theory of Moral Sentiments that you mentioned earlier. Maybe as a bit of context for readers, like I think everyone has probably heard of Adam Smith and The Wealth of Nations, but The Theory of Moral Sentiments is kind of this, you know, forgotten book, which Smith wrote before The Wealth of Nations and ended up editing five or six times. And the final edition was printed just before he passed away. And he actually thought that was the best work he did. He saw The Wealth of Nations as kind of falling underneath The Theory of Moral Sentiments. It was like one aspect of a broader theory that he was trying to work around. And ironically, it's the Wealth of Nations that gets talked about today. And it, you know, it defined the field of economics for how many years. And even today, they say that, you know, every great economist sits in the seat of Adam Smith. And that's, you know, that's a testament to his achievements. But for me, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, I thought was a better book. I mean, I read that partly because I was told that you can't understand The Wealth of Nations without reading that book. And The Theory of Moral Sentiments is a much deeper look at human nature and morality and where it comes from. And you can see a lot of Smith's ideas in The Wealth of Nations, where they come from. They fall under this moral rubric, which he puts in The Moral Sentiments. So if anyone's interested, I highly recommend it.
recommend it. Yeah, absolutely. And look, I was actually just looking at, you know, for anyone not looking to just jump straight into Adam Smith, because I know it sort of takes a while and it's a bit of a process, but Ross Roberts' book on Adam Smith, and he did, you know, the big point he makes in that, especially at the beginning of it, is just about, you know, the like life is a game of active choices, and, you know, that, and, you know, paraphrasing Smith a lot, but, you know, you do find that, you know, I do read voraciously like yourself, and a lot of the time, you know, reading is not, it's not difficult, but at the same time, you've got to actively, you know, make those choices to read. Do you find yourself, even though you do have your four sort of five authors that you're, or, you know, economists in particular, that you like to read, do you still have to sort of work hard at it, do you find, to actually make time for reading, or is it just something that you just get as a pleasure and you're able to access it that way?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. You probably found this. It's like, on the one hand, you know, finding the time to read can be a bit challenging, and then also you don't want to turn it into a chore. Like, I think one of the things I was doing initially was trying to have a target of books per week or per year, and that kind of, that takes the fun out of it. You want to be just kind of following your curiosity. And so I don't have any targets like that. It's more getting into the routine, like, you know, read for a couple of hours before you go to bed or on the train or something like that. But also I've started having three or four books going at once, because sometimes one can be quite dense. Yeah. Like Moral Sentiments took me a long time to get through because it was, you know, written in the 1750s. So the language is a real challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, mixing it up with something a bit lighter. And that way you can, you know, jump between the two based on, you know, how you're feeling and what appeals to you at the time. But one thing, actually, I got this listening to a guy called Jason Zweig. I think that's how you pronounce his surname. He's a financial journalist. And he, in a recent podcast, was asked what he was reading. And he said he had a mate that was taunting him, asking him, what's the best book you've never read? That question kind of compelled him to read a couple of classic texts, which he'd kind of been, you know, always wanting to read but hadn't got around to doing it. And so he sat down and started reading Dostoevsky. But, I mean, he said that simple question of kind of inverting it, rather than what should you read, what's the best thing you've never read? And I found that is a really good filtering mechanism to, you know, navigate your library, because, you know, you've probably got 50 books sitting there waiting to be read and collecting dust. It's like, you know, how do you pick one? And I think that's a great way to kind of filter through, because you get in the habit, I found, of like just picking up small books, so you feel like you're ticking over, but you don't really want to be doing that. You want to be finding stuff that's going to, you know, like another paradigm shift. And, you know, that's more likely to come from reading the best books that are around. So the latest one I actually just picked up is the Federalist Papers. I'm not sure if you've read that.
Great. Yep, touched on a little bit of it. Yeah, yep.
Yeah. I'm only into the intro, but yeah, I'm. It's kind of validating that little test.
Look, the big pull out from that: if men were angels, no government would be necessary. And I think that's definitely a topic for another time. But yeah, very interesting stuff.
Sean, can I ask you a question? I mentioned there about, like, you know, key texts. Like, I've got three or four books I can think of which, like, shaped my thinking and led me on down my, you know, intellectual journey. Do you have a couple that you can point to in the past that really shaped the way you look at the world?
Yeah, look, it's sort of hard to distill down. There's a lot of, you know, you're very big in economics, and there's, you know, and my sort of the big, you know, economics books that I've read, you know, I do enjoy Adam Smith when I can, you know, get the time to wrestle with it. But an economist that I have read a lot, who's really made economics accessible to me, is a guy called Thomas Sowell. He's an American economist at the Hoover Institute. Gosh, he's approaching about 90 now, but he's published probably in the vicinity of 20 to 30, if not more, 30 plus books, just on a range of issues, on race, on gender, on, you know, equality. But then there's this one book he's got, Economic Facts and Fallacies, which is just a great read. And I think at last count had been translated into seven editions and five languages or something like that. And I remember he modestly said recently that, you know, in that case, some people will find it mildly useful. And, you know, that's the... And, you know, can't put me down as one of those. But, you know, there's a lot, you know, when you mentioned before, Jordan, about books, you know, when you know when you've got someone in hand that you enjoy reading. And you know, I think, yeah, it's definitely Thomas Sowell, just the simplicity with which he writes, how he's able to cut through a lot of issues on economics, which can seem really overbearing and complex, but he distills right down for just a very sort of average reader. But, you know, guys who write on race too, there's one book, Shelby Steele, The Content of Our Character, which is a paraphrase, of course, of Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous phrase. But, you know, that's definitely a book that it's not a long book at all, but it's published, I think, in the wake of the riots in the early 90s, the race riots in LA. But that's something that really, I think, just speaks to the dignity of the individual. And, you know, having the individuals the highest goal that I think society can sort of strive for. And that's something that, you know, that's a standout book to me. But, you know, I've really just tried to read, again, lots of biographies. I read a good biography on Truman just over the break, which was fantastic, by Jonah Goldberg from the National Review Institute. And that was just a really good book. And, you know, again, to touch on Truman, you know, he is one of those leaders throughout history who was just very, you know, from a farm in Missouri, but just taught himself entirely, you know, just through sheer force of reading and just eliminating ignorance, you know, getting in touch with that curiosity that you mentioned. But yeah, and you know, one other book as well, is Booker T. Washington, Up from Slavery, which I think is just a great, great book that just speaks to character and adversity and triumphing, you know, in some really difficult circumstances. You know, he's a former slave. It was written in the, you know, the late 1800s. And that's just, you know, they're books of character, biographies of character that just really, really stick out and appeal. Yeah, so those are sort of ones for me, Jordan. And, you know, one of the things I just wanted to touch on before is, you know, with the time and just actually finding time, are you experimenting at all with formatting, you know, like in terms of, do you like a paper book or do you do the Kindle or do you even have time for audiobooks now at all? Is that something you've ventured into or are you still kind of an old school kind of hard copy only?
Yeah, I'm pretty old school on this. I mean, I know you use the Kindle. I don't know, for me there's something about holding the hard copy. I don't know. I feel like I'm more susceptible to distractions if I've got an electronic device with me. I'm probably portraying a lack of knowledge about how the Kindle actually works there. But, like, there's something for me about just holding the hard copy. And it gives you, I mean, yeah, being able to scribble in the margins and stuff. I know you can do that on all the devices nowadays. But, yeah, for me, it's an irrational love for the book. That's what it is. And to be honest, audiobook never even tried. So maybe that's something I usually find, though, that if I'm in a situation where I can put an audiobook in, I prefer to lock in a podcast. I think that's, for me, you know, I prefer to do that because I'm usually, you know, doing something, whether it's washing the dishes or going for a walk or something where, you know, you're doing something else. So having a podcast, it feels a bit easier to devour. Whilst with a book, I really find that to absorb it, you need to have that, you know, that solitude and being able to lose yourself in it for a couple of hours. I mean, I used to read on the train going into the city, but it would be frustrating because once you start to get into it, you kind of have to stop. But having a hard copy in a couple of hours to sit there and just get lost in it, you really feel like you really absorb it.
Yep. No, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I've sort of found just getting into the career a lot more is that, you know, the time for reading definitely does, you know, turn into a bit of a zero-sum game. So I am finding, like yourself, it's just a lot easier. You know, I've tried with the audiobooks, it's a bit trickier, but the podcast, I think, you know, it's that core thing of just, you know, like you mentioned before, Jordan, about curiosity, you know, trying to satisfy or quench that. And then, you know, I think as well, the other thing's eliminating ignorance. And if it's podcast, then... yeah, that's, you know, another good way to actually do those two things as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, just one thing, you know, a couple more things I just wanted to get your ideas on. You know, do you find with the more depth in your reading that you've had sort of slim time or less time for devouring news media or just current affairs? Or is it sort of the other way around?
Yeah, and I've definitely become like a zero-sum contest. And I'm finding that, I don't know, initially... I've been a bit torn on the news, the value of news. And one of the reasons was I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to learn about how Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger go about their daily habits. I mean, they're two sort of like heroes for me in a sense, the way they go about their life, not only from a financial investment point of view, but, you know, I think everyone gets interested in Buffett because of how he invests and how much money he's made. Yep. But the more you learn about him and his partner, Charlie, you realize that these two aren't, you know, just some of the wealthiest people in the world. They're also two of the most content men in the world. And that really struck me. And so I've been trying to learn more about their habits and the way they learn and propel themselves forward. And they both read three newspapers a day. And that really took me because, I found the news to be a bit, I find it distracting, and a lot of it's just noise. There's Nassim Taleb says if you want to see how useless the news is, go and pick up a newspaper that's a month old and see what's in it, because you just realize that a lot of it doesn't impact you. And that's the complete opposite of what you get from a book. The best books are timeless, and reading Wealth of Nations or Theory of Moral Sentiments, it applies to you today. The news, in a sense, I'm trying to use it in the reverse sense. Like, I might get a subject or a company I'm interested in, and then I'll go look for what's happening in the news rather than the other way around. It's taken me a while to get there. I was, for a time there, reading the AFR every day and part of the Australian. What about yourself? Do you devour the news, or are you a bit of both?
Yeah. Look, I try to, I'm certainly not a big news man. I think, like, it's just something that, in previous roles I've had to be sort of across in certain areas of the news, given previous sort of roles and policy positions. I think, Jordan, I'm kind of the, like, I definitely enjoy a lot more depth, and, part of the reason why I've sort of put this together is just to try and capture a bit more of that depth in what I think is missing is, if you're doing is following headlines day to day and you don't have any sort of rhythm about the broader pulses of, why things are the way they are, how things have developed, how they are, the broader ideas shaping economics and, current affairs, that those undercurrents, then I think you're really missing out a lot. So I think that's where reading can sort of inform, that current affairs. Because I do think it is, if you're just reading the news, I think you'd just be extremely tired, it would just exhaust me if I was just reading the news and not having any broader depth to what I was reading. And, I think it's probably, a bit frustrating too if you do have a broader reading appetite, about the lack of depth in a lot of news and current affairs. So, and I think that's something we'll definitely touch on in a future episode, because it's that, I think there's a lot of discontent with mainstream news, and it's you can see that in a lot of respects, and it's being pronounced in a lot of ways. But I think something we'll return to in a future sort of podcast. But
touch on that quickly, I think one book I read recently, my brother handed it to me, it was called The Shallows by Nicholas Carr. And that was an interesting look at how social media and modern media are sort of changing the way our brains respond to new information. The argument in the book is that we've become, like, our minds are adapting to the clickbait that we get. And so, that dopamine you get when you have a new headline, it actually reduces your ability to concentrate. And that it's kind of like a side effect of the 24-hour news cycle that people don't really pick up on. And, like you're saying, that a book is the complete opposite. You get, you can get a deep argument, a really, thorough examination of a topic that you will never get in a news article. And, I highly recommend that as well.
All right, cool. Well, look, when we actually drop this into a page, we can put it in show notes. So, definitely that's a good, very good recommendation. And, we touched on before, Jordan, with any other books you'd just like to mention as well, that you touched on their moral sentiments, but anything else that on the list that you think just really touches on what you're really pulls the strings for you, or that you want to encourage other people to read?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I mentioned before, there's like three or four texts that shape my thinking. In the area of finance and investing, The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. And for those who are familiar with the area, like, that's considered the Bible of investing. Graham was the first guy to outline a theory of financial markets and investing that wasn't you know, founded in gambling, essentially. It was removed from the speculative tendencies of what most people did. Yeah. I mean, the book was written in the 1940s, and he was investing during the 1929 market crash and the Great Depression. And back then, a lot of people didn't really look at stocks as businesses, and that was kind of his key contribution. Yep. And then that book is really the first attempt to outline a way of investing that's based on business fundamentals. So that as a interesting footnote, Warren Buffett was his student and arguably greatest pupil. He was the only person who had in his class.
That's right.
Mean, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger are a continuation of those investing ideas and principles. So yeah, for anyone who's interested in stocks, finance, definitely read that book. In economics, The Road to Serfdom by Friedrich Hayek. I've read that a couple of times now, and that's that really shaped my thinking, my views on economics quite deeply. As a bit of context, Hayek was one of the great economic intellectuals of the last 100 years. He was the noted sparring partner of John Maynard Keynes, and he wrote this book in the, I think it was in the 40s as well. It was in response to the Western liberal democracies, the shift that their economies were taking following World War II. And he was essentially, he was worried that they were about to head down the same path that the Russians and the Germans had 20 or 30 years earlier, because they were increasingly heading towards a more centralized planned economy. And his book was essentially an attempt to outline why that was dangerous, and he drew on the Russian and German experiences, showing that a lot of the reasons why guys like Hitler and Stalin were able to come to power and was because of the increasing centralization of their economies. That sort of economic system allows results in a political framework where it's susceptible to totalitarianism. So that was an incredibly profound idea when I read it, and I think it's the best explanation of how the friendly, artistic, great German people managed to let someone like Hitler rule them. So highly recommend that for anyone who's interested in economics and economic history. And then
Jordan, just very, very quickly on that one, it's just very interesting how that appetite still lives on for a lot of central command and control. It's just that it's that impulse that I don't think it's never going to be, despite how far we've come with free market economics and capitalism, there's still just such a desire to, we'll just have a program to manage that, or we'll just centrally control it. If only if we had, all of the data, but, that's probably for another time. But it's just very interesting that, people throughout history, but Hayek definitely in, sounded the alarm bell on, half a century ago, and people are still committing a lot of those mistakes with that poor thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And sorry, Jordan, I cut you off there, your last one.
Yeah, no, you're right. The last one was the theory of moral sentiments that we discussed earlier. So, those are the three texts for me if I had to recommend to people.
Yep. Fantastic. Well, brilliant. And, one of the things, and I think we've sort of touched on this a bit with current affairs, and I think, one thing I, didn't want to delve in too much, but it's probably just tips for reading, I think. If anyone out there is listening and they want to read more, what can you distill down for them to actually try and read a bit more?
Yeah. So I think steer clear of things like speed reading and stuff like that. I think that's just a gimmick. A lot of it is just discipline, being able to put aside the time and really focus your energies on the book. It's like exercise. The more you focus on your run or whatever, you're going to do a better job of it. Same with reading. If you go in casually, you're going to read casually and not digest the whole thing. Actually, you'll find this funny. My brother bought me a book a couple of years ago called How to Read a Book. And I laughed off at the time. I go, what are you doing? He's like, no, seriously, if you think about it, this should be the first book you read before anything else. I did end up reading it, and it was much better than I was expecting. It's the type of book I wish I had when I was about 18, because a lot of it is pretty elementary, and it's the stuff you kind of do intuitively now. It's like it has it talks about sort of three levels of reading. One is the inspectional reading, The second is analytical reading, and the third is syntopical reading. And inspectional, just to give a brief summary, inspectional is when you, you know, you're in a bookshop and you pick it up and you have a scan through the contents and look through and you're like, oh yeah, this, you know, this is worth a closer read. And, you know, even reading like the preface or, you know, one of the chapters halfway through just to get an idea of, you know, is this worth my time? And then the analytical read is, you know, start to finish, taking notes and really trying to digest the message. And it might not even just be one read, it might be two or three reads. And it's the last one, syntopical reading. And this was the one that, this was the thing I had never really thought about and was the, what made the book worth reading was this idea that you read not just to learn the ideas in one book, but to kind of critically argue with it as you go through. It's like, you know, you need to, you want to digest that person's argument, but then find where's there a flaw or how does this fit in with other stuff I've read? And you end up trying to build your own sort of theory or understanding of the subject matter based on not only that book, but other ones you've read. And it kind of, you know, sits above all those texts with your own thought and understanding. And I think that notion of syntopical reading is really, really interesting and profound. And I think that's what he said is that, sorry, the author of this book, his name is Mortimer Adler. He talks about how that syntopical reading is synonymous with writing. And, you know, you can, you try to come up with this unique understanding of a field based on the stuff you read for the purposes of expanding your own, you know, your own version to people that might be interested in that subject matter. So I thought that was pretty, pretty awesome. And yeah, highly recommend that book for anyone who's trying to improve their reading or wants some techniques to help the way they process the information in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. No, look, some really, really good tips there. And I think there's some good takeaways even for myself. And like I said, Jordan, I do find it, you know, I did, was a voracious reader. I still am, but, you know, I've sort of been on the slide a little bit the last couple, you know, year or two while, you know, the career's developed a lot. But I think I'm still, you know, finding a lot of time to read, but, you know, constantly learning stuff too about, you know, must reads. And you touched on at the start of this, the interview too, about lists that, you know, you read something and then five other books tumble out. And then, you know, you read something else, another five, and it's just incredible to keep finding, you know, must reads, even lists of things that you've got to read from a lot of writers that you respect. You're certainly just, you never stop learning. I think that's one of the key things. As much as you're mowing down your ignorance and you're satisfying your curiosity, you just definitely never stop learning.
And actually, one, just to touch on one word you said there, competency, and that's one thing you start to realize the more you read, your circle of competency starts to shrink. I think the ignorant man feels like he knows everything, but as you become wiser and read more, you realize that the extent of your knowledge of the world and the universe is quite limited, and it makes you you know, more humble and appreciative of how much, how complex the world is. It's, you know, and I. What you were saying about, you know, five books coming out of one, that kind of idea I got from Nassim Taleb reading his book Anti-Fragile. He uses the term anti-fragile to describe things that gain from disorder. So he, know, the ancient Greek god, I think Hydra, which Hercules tried to kill, it was, you know, you cut one head off and you got two heads that popped up. That's anti-fragile. And he says, you know, the personal library is also anti-fragile. Every time you read a book, more come out of it. And it's kind of a scary thought, because I was talking about this with my brother. It means that the day your last day on earth is probably the day where you will have more books that you want to read but haven't read than any other point in your life. And so it's like you're not going to get a list whether you're going to complete. It's going to be growing and growing and, you know, but by the time of your demise, there'll be thousands of books.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it's very interesting, isn't it? Like, as much as you sort of eliminate ignorance, you realise how ignorant you are the more you read. Yeah, no, it's a really good point. Yeah. Cool. Well, all right, Jordan. Well, look, I think that sort of exhausts time for the first episode. And again, I can't thank you enough for coming along and sharing some of your tips. And, you know, I definitely learnt a lot there. I didn't know about you as well. And, you know, there's certainly plenty more to talk about on that topic in particular, but, you know, other topics we want to try and to grapple with as well. So Yeah, thanks very much, Jordan, for appearing on being the first interviewee on the Jacobs podcast and to many more.
Sean, it's an absolute honour, a pleasure, and that was heaps of fun. So I hope we do it again.
Yep, absolutely. Looking forward to it. Cool. Excellent. All right, thank you. Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers.